Governor Tony Evers proclaimed August as National Water Quality Month in Wisconsin in 2019 as part of his commitment to bettering drinking water in the state. Well, about 3 years later, this important issue is still top of mind for many state officials and residents alike. We've heard about the discovery of the chemical PFAS in towns across the state. Rhinelander, French Island, and Eau Claire are a few. The $1 trillion federal infrastructure bill also made news earlier this summer. This bill would provide $55 billion to upgrade water and wastewater systems. In Wisconsin alone, it's estimated that meeting future water and wastewater needs will cost the state around $15 billion. Well, here to talk about water quality in western Wisconsin are Lane Berg from the City of Eau Claire and Kyle Burton from the Department of Natural Resources. We'll go over three common water contaminants and what you can do to ensure the water you drink is safe. But first, we welcome WPR reporter Hope Kerwin. Hope, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Hope, earlier this month you went to French Island, which is situated between the Mississippi and Black Rivers near La Crosse. And it's home to the town of Campo. Many residents on the island can't drink the water that's coming from their taps. In fact, you reported that out of the 533 private wells tested on the island, all but 12 had traces of PFAS. That means more than a quarter of those wells had PFAS levels deemed unsafe for drinking water by the Department of Health Services. So, Hope, how did they get to that point? How did the PFAS get into their water?
So PFAS can come from a variety of household items like nonstick cookware, but mainly where officials are pointing this, are saying this contamination comes from is the use of firefighting foam at the La Crosse Regional Airport, which is located on French Island. And so that foam's been used over the years and contains PFAS. And, you know, they found PFAS in municipal wells on French Island as early as 2014. And it's just been kind of a discovery of realizing how far this contamination spreads on the island.
And then after that was discovered, what did the city of La Crosse do anything? What did they do?
So it's part of the background on this issue is that, you know, we've been learning more about PFAS contamination over the years, and it's only been recently that guidelines have really been established for this. So when it was first discovered in 2014, there were no state guidelines for this. The city continued to kind of study this issue, and in May of 2019, the Wisconsin DNR ordered the city to investigate how widespread contamination was on the island. And that is kind of what set the ball rolling of, you know, French Island residents becoming aware that their private wells may be affected by this issue. So in October of 2020, the city notified around 120 households around the La Crosse Regional Airport that their private wells may be affected. And that's kind of what set the ball rolling when it came to testing of private wells.
And then the DHS declared an emergency water advisory for the area in March. And today, the state and the city of La Crosse are providing residents with big jugs of water. Hope, how do residents feel about that solution?
Yeah, so this is part of what I wanted to kind of capture in my story from earlier this summer. And so I was able to meet with two residents of French Island. Their names are Dale and Mary Wetterling. They're retired school teachers who have lived on the island for more than 30 years. And, you know, they talked about being grateful for having the clean water available because they were concerned with, you know, the impact of drinking contaminated water coming from their private well. But Mary also told me that it's not an easy solution for her and for some of her older neighbors. This is what she told me. Well, I'll just mention what she shared. She said that it's difficult for her and some of her neighbors who are widows to pick up these 5-gallon jugs of water, place them on their Culligan water dispensers. And so, you know, she's had her husband Dale and some of their other neighbors have had to kind of help each other out to try to even just load up their clean water into the dispensers. I will say that, you know, Mary had such a great kind of attitude about it. She actually named their Culligan water dispenser Aqua Maria because, you know, she felt like it had become an important part of their household. But it's really just kind of relearning a lot of those, you know, daily tasks of not going to the tap, but instead going to their water dispenser, having to go to Quick Trip to buy a bag of ice because they can't use the ice that comes out of their refrigerator.
So after that happened, how did residents react to discovering that they'd been exposed to PFAS? How did they feel about knowing that they'd been drinking that for a while?
I think for a lot of residents, it's raised a lot of questions about what the impact will be or has been on their personal health. That was something that, you know, Mary brought up to me. She pointed out that her husband, Dale, is a two-time cancer survivor. And it just, you know, she felt like she couldn't help but wonder, you know, what impact the PFAS contamination had on that. It's also raised a lot of concerns for residents about their property values and their ability to potentially sell their house in the future. That was something that was directly on the minds of the Wetterlings because, you know, as they're aging, they're thinking about, you know, what happens to their home when they can no longer live there. That actually prompted them to install their own private, you know, water filtration system. But, you know, Dale Wetterling really brought up to me that, you know, he feels for the residents who maybe don't have the funds to install their own water system or even pay for water if the you know, the city or the state were to discontinue providing free water to residents. You know, he was really concerned with those that just kind of get, you know, get by day to day on and don't have a lot of, you know, funding to fall back on if they need to all of a sudden, you know, look for alternatives.
Yeah, speaking of like alternatives and finding solutions, what solutions are residents hoping for?
Well, the Campbell Town Board has recently hired an engineering firm to kind of explore options for the town. And so that's one avenue that they're pursuing. But when I talked with, you know, the town chair, he mentioned to me that they don't have a lot of extra funding in their town budget to fall back on to pursue some of these, you know, water studies that they potentially would need, or even to start installing a municipal water system on the island. I mean, that would be incredibly costly for this small community. And so that's one potential avenue. You know, he also mentioned that a lot of residents want to keep their private wells. There's a people who live in this town, you know, have a sense of independence. That's kind of part of the character of the community. And, you know, a lot of them don't want to see, you know, Campbell move to a municipal water system and have kind of pursued their own solutions through filtration systems and other ways. But, you know, for some folks, they have contamination so high that those filtration systems aren't a good solution. So they're really in a tough place.
Hope, you've been reporting on this issue. I mean, you've done this story and then some others. You know, where do you think that the people that you've talked to, where do you think they want things to head in the next couple of years?
I think that there is still a lot of questions that have kind of yet to be answered. And it's, I think that what I heard from town leaders in Campbell is that they would like to see, you know, some leadership on a state level to kind of help them navigate the situation. They know they're not the only community in Wisconsin that is facing PFAS contamination. This is not unique to the town of Campbell. And so I think there is a desire to kind of see both, you know, assistance in the form of funding, but also just, you know, assistance in the idea of, you know, finding kind of a more clear path forward. You know, I think both leaders on the town side as well as the city side, there's still a lot of questions that have kind of yet to be answered about who is ultimately responsible for addressing this water contamination.
Thank you so much, Hope Kerwin, for joining us on the West Side today. Hope's a reporter based in La Crosse. Up next, we'll hear from Lane Berg, the utilities manager at the City of Eau Claire, and Kyle Burton, who's the field operations director for the Bureau of drinking water and groundwater at the DNR. We'll continue talking about PFAS, plus we'll discuss lead and nitrates in drinking water. Do you have questions about the water that you drink? You can join this conversation by emailing us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Clara Neipert. This is the West Side on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11, it's the Larry Mueller Show. Fall's a great time to look at the health of your lawn. Larry's turf expert is back to talk about what you can do to have a healthy lawn next spring. That's next on this station. And then coming up next week on the West Side, we're talking about the arrival of Afghan refugees at Fort McCoy. Our communities in western Wisconsin have been home to refugees before, so what have we learned from those experiences? We'll discuss what refugees need and how we can prepare to help them. That's next week at 10 on this station. Well, you're listening to The West Side, where we're talking about water quality in western Wisconsin, and we're going to go over a couple of different contaminants in our water and what you can do to make sure the water that you're drinking is safe. We now welcome to The West Side Lane Berg. Lane is the utilities manager at the city of Eau Claire. In that role, he oversees the operations and maintenance of the systems that are responsible for our water treatment and wastewater collection and water distribution throughout the Eau Claire community. Welcome to the West Side, Lane.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Kyle Burton. Kyle is the field operations director for the Bureau of Drinking Water and Groundwater at the DNR. Kyle, welcome to the West Side.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here.
So during a press conference in La Crosse earlier this summer, Congressman Ron Kind said that city officials are at the forefront of the water quality issue. Lane, in that end, who is responsible for making sure our drinking water is clean?
Well, certainly, you know, we're responsible for making sure we have good drinking water. The DNR oversees our operations and, you know, they make suggestions to us on what we can do to keep our water safe. And they've helped us through this process that we're going through right now.
The DNR released their 2020 annual drinking water report earlier this week, and the report found that last year, more than 98% of Wisconsin's public water systems provided water that met all of the health-based drinking water standards. So given that information, Kyle, how concerned should the average Wisconsinite be about their drinking water?
Yeah, thanks. Let me start by saying in Wisconsin, we are very fortunate to be a water-rich state. We have over 84,000 miles of river, 260 miles of those from the Mississippi River, which the folks in the west side of the state are very familiar with. We have 660 miles of Great Lakes shoreline, more than 5 million acres of wetlands, and 15,000 plus lakes in the state of Wisconsin. In addition to that, we have ready access to easily accessible groundwater in this state. There's enough groundwater below the surface of Wisconsin to fill the entire state to the height of 11 feet. Because we're so water rich, we have easy access to drinking water. There are over 800,000 private wells in the state of Wisconsin. The state of Wisconsin also has over 11,500 public water systems, which is the most of any state in the country. You just mentioned our annual compliance report that stated 98% of Wisconsin's public water systems are in compliance with all federal safe drinking water standards. That is directly, we attribute that to folks like Lane and their teams who are out there overseeing those water systems every day, making sure that they are meeting those requirements. Unfortunately, not all Wisconsinites have access to safe drinking water. 10% of private wells in Wisconsin exceed the health standard for nitrates. Wisconsin has over 200,000 lead service lines at municipalities that can potentially leach lead into the drinking water of municipal customers. And PFAS, I think, which we've already heard about today and what we're going to talk about more, is an emerging contaminant that affects both private well owners and public water systems around the state. So these are just three of the main issues we're facing around the state, and we're really focusing on that as a state and as an agency to make improvements in order to bring us closer to that safe drinking water for all Wisconsin citizens.
Lane, Kyle just mentioned his top three priorities when it comes to drinking water. So lead, nitrates, and PFAS. What, Lane, what keeps you up at night? What are your biggest concerns?
Sure. Certainly PFAS is the predominant one. Nitrates are not a big issue for us. We don't have a lot of farmland in close proximity to our well field, so our nitrate levels are good. Our lead is not a huge concern for us. You know, we're being very aggressive with our lead service replacement program, but we do treat our drinking water to a pH of around 9, which makes the water non-corrosive. And we, to do pH adjustment, we actually add lime to our water, and that lime over time coats the inside of the lead pipes. So we have a good degree of confidence that, you know, lead is not leaching into drinking water. We do our lead and copper sampling every 3 years, and our results have been very positive on that. But certainly, you know, lead services, it's the right thing to do to get rid of it. We just want them out of our system, even though we don't feel they're an immediate concern, and that we're working with the DNR to do that. But PFAS is something that is out of our control right now. We're doing everything we can to mitigate the issue, but, you know, it's something that we can't physically control. We're taking measures to protect our citizens, and right now levels are well below recommended enforcement standards. So we're in good position right now. We're taking action to make that even better. And PFAS certainly would be my number one priority.
Kyle, generally, who should worry more about the quality of the water that they drink? People drinking from public water systems or with their own private wells? Or should everyone kind of be aware?
That's a great question. And I think you answered partially it right at the end there. Everyone should be aware. And the way for people to be aware is to, in municipalities where you're served by a municipal water system, to contact your municipal water system. Ask them about the quality of water. Each municipal system around the state releases an annual consumer confidence report where they detail the quality of the water that they serve to the customers. And private well owners, really, if we think of private well owners like they're the owners of their own small drinking water system, right? They're in charge of understanding their own quality of water. So it's on them, with our support, obviously, and we can answer questions and support them with the information that we have. But they really need to, we always recommend private well owners sample their wells whenever they have concerns about the drinking water, and actually on an annual basis for things as basic as bacteria and nitrate.
The Wisconsin PFAS Action Plan, which was published late last year, framed clean drinking water as an environmental justice issue. Kyle, why should we think of this issue in that context?
Well, in rural and urban communities, the effects of contamination may have costly economic and health impacts on residents. Whether rural communities with homeowners with private wells, or residents in a city or town renting their housing, or in cities relying on municipal water, efforts to be informed and take precautions like sampling or utilizing filtration systems may require out-of-pocket purchases that some can't afford. We work to support communities addressing all types of contamination. While we're doing this, we try to understand the population to ensure we're getting the right information to the residents in the right way. This may mean translating resources, engaging with community organizations, making materials available offline, etc. With PFAS especially, there are no federal standards. There is no regular required testing. So smaller disadvantaged communities may not have the resources to voluntarily explore and address whether PFAS is an issue in the drinking water system, therefore not knowing and not being able to understand the quality of the water when it relates to PFAS and take steps that they may need to take to improve it.
We're talking about drinking water quality today on the West Side, and you can join this conversation by emailing ideas@wpr.org. That's the word ideas@wpr.org. Well, earlier we heard WPR reporter Kerwin talk about PFAS levels on French Island. And I want to talk more about PFAS. Kyle, are there certain areas of the state that are more susceptible to PFAS or other water quality issues?
There are areas of the state that are more susceptible to drinking water contamination as a whole, just based on the geology or where they're getting their drinking water from. We talked about right at the top when I started that drinking water is so easily accessible in the state of Wisconsin. That means we can basically drill down or pound a pipe in the ground 40 feet and we can have drinking water. When that drinking water is so close to the surface, it's more susceptible to influence from the surface. Therefore, it could be contaminated easier. So there are areas of the state. Some of those areas are in the west part of the state where we have a shallow sand and gravel aquifer that is vulnerable to surface contamination.
Well, let's back up a bit. Lane, what do we know about PFAS? Where do they come from?
Yeah, so, you know, PFAS was used in the manufacture of nonstick cookware service, cookware items, in clothing that is water and oil repellent. It's been used in firefighting foam. So there's many uses of it. So, and it's been around since the 1950s. It has a unique trait of repelling both oil and water. And that made it attractive for, you know, some of the manufacturing purposes that I just mentioned. But, you know, obviously it's one of those things that over time we've learned that it, you know, isn't necessarily something that should be used in those processes. So that, you know, I guess we learn a lot over time about many, many things, and this is a new and hot topic, you know, for us in the water industry.
And then, so are PFAS only found in groundwater, or can it be found in like a stream? Like, where would you find PFAS?
Sure, it could be found anywhere. You know, any place that has been impacted by, you know, by say firefighting foam being discharged, it could be on the surface, could be in groundwater. Could be found in, you know, dry media. So it's not restricted to any certain, you know, particular environment.
Lane, also I'm wondering, what does the testing process look like to determine whether a well's PFAS mixture is above the Department of Health Services standards? So when you're out there testing Eau Claire's wells, can you give us a picture of what that looks like?
Sure. Yeah, as we're out sampling our wells, we have taps inside of our well houses, and we run water. We turn the well on so it's operating. We run water through a tap, collect a sample, and then the service we've been using right now is in Sacramento, California. It seems, you know, a little bit unique to be shipping our samples that far away, but they're a very responsive lab, and they're able to get our results much quicker than other sources that we've tried to locate locally here. So we take our samples, we overnight them to Sacramento, California. So we did samples on Wednesday of this week. We overnighted them, so the lab received them on Thursday. They interpret the results right away, and then we'll get a report sometime today. So we take our samples on Wednesdays, we see our results on Fridays, and we like the quick feedback on that. That way, if we need to do something differently, we can take action right away.
The city of Eau Claire found wells with levels of PFAS above the recommended standards, but then those wells were shut off, which made the city's water safe to drink. So, Lane, why can you explain why the city's water is still safe to drink?
Yep. So one point I do want to make is the entry point sample, which is the point where water leaves our water plant and enters our distribution system, that was never above recommended enforcement standards. So the DNR asked to see results of some of our sampling that we've done. We did proactive voluntary sampling last year in 2020, and then we also did some again this spring. The DNR asked if they could see our results, and we gladly shared with the DNR. And the DNR and DHS, they reviewed our results, and they said, you know, I think, you know, you should take a little closer look at individual wells. So we did that. We sampled all of our wells instead of just the entry point. And it did help us find four wells on the north end of our well field that were higher in levels of PFAS. So we shut those wells off, which, you know, brought our levels way down. And but like I said, our entry point sample has never exceeded those recommended enforcement standards. We've always maintained that. But shutting those four wells off made it even better. So, you know, we do have PFAS in our water, but it's in very, very small concentrations. So, you know, we feel very confident that the water is still safe, and we're going to do everything in our power to keep it that way.
Lane mentioned that the city and the DNR work together. Kyle, can you give us a picture of that working relationship? How do you, as a worker at the DNR, interact with cities?
I think Lane hit it right on the head. Specific to the relationship with Eau Claire and our agency throughout this process, Eau Claire has been very proactive. They've been very protective. They've been very conscientious of making sure that the water that they serve to their customers is of a quality that's safe to drink. And that has been the case through the whole thing, or through the whole process. We have worked really well with Eau Claire. They have kept us communicated really well with us all the way through the process. We've had, you know, early on, we were having weekly or daily meetings. Lane and I, we talked several times a week for the first few weeks, and have a really good relationship. And we're very happy with the way they're continuing to move forward on a statewide basis. It's similar. We are partners with local drinking water providers, municipalities, in making sure that the water that is served the customers and the people of Wisconsin are safe to drink. So we really go at it at on that level as partners, making sure that we meet all federal Safe Drinking Water Act requirements. And in cases like PFAS, where we don't have those state or federal regulations, really working together to find out, to find a common sense and public health, public health related solution to making sure folks have safe drinking water.
Kyle, what can people do if they do discover, like residents on French Island, that they have been drinking PFAS? What's the first step that they can take?
Well, if they have PFAS in excess of the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, DHS's recommended values, the recommendation is for them to not use that water for consumption any longer, find an alternate safe source of drinking water, like bottled water or community water that has been sampled for PFAS. That's the first step. The next step really probably would be to contact the Department of Natural Resources, contact myself or some of the folks that I've worked with and talk through possible solutions. If it's a large, case where there are many wells contaminated like we have on French Island, we get involved quite extensively. If it's an isolated case, we work one-on-one with those folks to try to find a solution, a long-term potable water solution for them.
Lane, speaking of solutions, what are you working on to remove PFAS from the city's wells?
Sure. So some of the things we're working on right now, a short-term solution is we're installing some piping at our well field, and that will probably take place next week. And that's going to allow us to take our wells that are higher in PFAS and dump them to waste. We have two lagoons in our well field that are 30 acres in size. And we want to run the wells that are higher in PFAS and dump into the lagoons. One of the things that will help us do is prevent the PFAS from migrating to our good wells right now. And by running them, that will draw the PFAS to the higher level wells. So that's an immediate thing that we're doing. We're looking at treatment options. There are treatment systems for PFAS, so we're investigating the possibility of treating individual wells, multiple wells, even a full plant treatment system. So that's something we're looking at. It's very expensive. It's It's a very costly venture, but we're going to do everything in our power to keep our water safe. Another thing we're looking at is possibly drilling some wells in different locations that, you know, are not impacted by PFAS. We think the PFAS is limited to a, you know, a fairly small area, but we'll be learning more about that as we do a study here. But we think it's limited to a fairly small area. So, you know, there are areas in our well field that we could potentially drill new wells. We could drill outside of our well field even and connect to our system. So, you know, we're looking at every option we can. We are doing a study, or we'll be starting a study very soon here that will kind of give us a better feel for which direction we should head. And, you know, certainly I thank Kyle and the DNR for working with us. They've really helped us to get a grasp on what we need to do. They're very helpful in showing us options, you know, guiding us in the right direction. They've been through it before, obviously, with other communities, and you know, it has been a really good relationship, and I thank them for that.
And you, Lane, you're mentioning a project that might show you where your groundwater is going. Would that be your partnership with Gannett Fleming?
Yeah.
Yep. Let's talk more about that. So Gannett Fleming is a civil engineering company in Madison, and they're working with the city of Eau Claire to map groundwater. So Lane, once groundwater is mapped, what can it tell us?
Sure. So Gannett Fleming, they do have some experience in our well field. They have done some groundwater flow, directional flow data in our well field. And so we took advantage of that. They've done some research already, so they have a distinct advantage over other engineering firms that do the same type of work. And what we're asking them to do is complete our entire well field. They have a portion of it done already, and we're asking to do a complete groundwater flow map of our well field. And that's going to tell us, you know, which direction groundwater flows. And we have a pretty solid idea which direction it flows, but they'll be able to really dial it in. Another thing they'll be able to do is they'll be able to simulate groundwater movements, you know, based on configurations of wells that we have in use. So we'll know what happens when we turn a certain well on, if that affects the groundwater flow at all. They're also going to help us identify the limits of the PFAS flow, and we have lots of monitoring wells around our well field, in the well field, outside of the well field, and we're going to do everything in our power to identify the limits of that PFAS plume. They'll be able to predict the migration of the plume. And then we're hoping that they can help us determine the duration of the, you know, the PFAS plume, how long we'll be dealing with it. That's going to give us the better idea which direction we should head with. You know, do we do treatment systems? Do we do new wells? So it's really going to be a useful tool for us. So we're excited to get going on that. We're just in the infancy of that relationship with them, and we'll be starting that work very soon here, potentially even next week.
We've been talking a lot about the testing of municipal wells, but I'm getting a question here from a listener about testing private wells. They're wondering, as a private well owner, who do I contact to get my water tested at their own expense? Kyle, who should someone contact to get their well tested?
Great question, and thanks to your listener for typing it in. Local water quality labs, and I know that doesn't give a lot of information, but I guess the best information I could give folks is to go on to the DNR's website, wisconsin.dnr.gov, and search drinking water testing or private labs. And we have a list on our website of private labs around the state that can analyze your drinking water or whatever contaminant you're concerned about. That list, you could find a lab close to you. You could find more information about the lab. So contacting the lab directly and explaining to them what you want to test for, and they'll be able to help you. And if that, again, isn't working out for you, you can always contact us right at the DNR, your local DNR, or myself. We can walk you through any of those scenarios.
The DHS reports that 40% of Wisconsin residents get their water from private wells. So backing up on this conversation a little bit, Kyle, how often should people test their wells in the first place?
Yeah, people should test their wells at a bare minimum. Our recommendation is annually. For most people living in a rural area, the greatest contaminants of concerns would be bacteria and nitrate. Rural areas tend to have higher probability of being contaminated by those two contaminants. They're the most common contaminants we see in private wells. So annually, for those wells, or any time that folks notice a change in their water quality, a change in color, a change in smell, a change in taste, anytime those criteria are met, folks should we recommend people sample a private well.
What does it look like for a well to be tested? What does that process look like?
Very similar to what Lane described earlier, just on a smaller scale. It could be as simple as turning on your kitchen faucet for a little while, running it till the water's cold, putting a bottle provided by the laboratory underneath it, and then sending it into the lab.
And how much does that typically cost?
Depending on what you're sampling for, bacteria and nitrate sample, $20 to $40 each for those two contaminants. Other contaminants can be more costly. PFAS is much more costly. That's around $300 to $400 to sample for PFAS. But other contaminants are somewhere in between.
Does the DNR offer financial assistance if you find that your well is contaminated?
Yeah, there are. We have a program called the Well Compensation Grant Program. And in that program, we're able to help folks with contaminated private wells if they meet certain criteria. If your well is contaminated with bacteria and nitrates due to livestock contamination, if there's some chemical contamination, if you have arsenic, which is a naturally occurring element over a certain level week, we can help people drill a new well with the cost of drilling a new well if they meet, if they meet a financial criteria. Must be, there's a household income level that's associated with this. This is all driven by statute. This is all in state law. But there are programs. It's called the Well Compensation Grant Program that can help people with contaminated wells get new wells.
And yeah, that limit there for income is to be eligible. The family income cannot exceed $65,000 for the prior calendar year to be eligible. And like you mentioned, you can find more about the Well Compensation Grant Program on the DNR's website. We're talking about Western Wisconsin's water quality with Lane Berg from the City of Eau Claire and Kyle Burton with the DNR. Do you have questions or comments about the water coming from your taps? What changes do you want to see made in your community? You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. I'm Claire Neipert. This is The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up in our region, Badlands Snow Park in Hudson will host the 35th Midwest Champion Sheepdog Trials. And that's near Labor Day weekend from September 2nd through 6th. WPR is one of the sponsors of this dog show-like competition. It is the second oldest in the United States, and it's open to the public. You can visit WWSDA.com. Again, that's WWSDA.com to learn more about this event. Every Thursday at 10 on this station, it's Spectrum West, where Al Ross explores the musics, arts, humanities in Western Wisconsin. This show includes in-depth behind-the-scene interviews, stories about area writers, musicians, theater, visual arts, and much more. That's Spectrum West with Al Ross, Thursdays at 10 on this station. Well, you're listening to The West Side, but we're moving our conversation to talk about lead service lines. Now, lead typically does not occur naturally. Instead, it goes through the process of corrosion. It can get into water as it flows through pipes and fixtures with lead in them. Pipes made before 1950 are the most likely to contain lead. Well, the City of Eau Claire last year mandated homeowners to replace lead service lines whenever they're discovered during city projects. And the city has a long-term goal of replacing more than an estimated 1,000 service lines that contain lead. Lane, tell us more about this project. What progress have you made since you started?
Sure. Yeah, we started back in 2017. We received $300,000 in grant money from the DNR. And then in 2018, we received another $500,000 from the DNR for the replacement of lead services on private property. So that really addressed, if the city had went through and redone a street where they'd installed copper service lines out to the property line, but the homeowner didn't replace that portion, that helped us to complete that portion of replacement. So, and there were a lot of them. We estimated about 1,100 of those services were lead back when we started the program in 2017. To date, now we've replaced over 400 of them. So we're down to about 700. Our goal is to replace all of them by 2023. So we've got the rest of this construction and a couple more construction seasons to get that done. We received over $800,000 from the DNR in June of this year. So we're being very aggressive. We're trying to get as many replaced this season as we can. The DNR, I believe they had about $64 million in grant money that was eligible this year. So we got a chunk of that, and many other municipalities were able to secure some grant money. That money expires at the end of this season. And then in January, we'll have to reapply for additional grant money. So we're hoping that there will be a DNR money available. We have taken steps to ensure that our program will continue. We have a capital improvement program where we've slotted money for lead service replacement. So even if we don't get DNR money, we're optimistic that we're going to be able to keep our lead service replacement program rolling. We've done some things recently that have really helped the program progress. When we started the program, we offered $1,000 to homeowners to have the replacement done. And, that covered a portion of the cost, but not enough to be enticing. So, a couple years later, we upped it to $2,000 per replacement, got a little more buy-in. Now we've increased our reimbursement rate to $2,600 per service, which in most cases covers the entire cost of lead service replacement. So it's no money out of pocket for homeowners. It's really, really helped our program. Another thing that we did was we were starting to pay the contractors directly. In the past, the homeowner had to pay the contractor up front and then submit paperwork to the city, and then we would reimburse them. But, the homeowner had to, commit money, and it had to sit for a month or better before they actually got a check from the city. So now we pay the contractors directly. It really eases the burden on any homeowners. And probably one of the biggest things that's helped the success of our program is we're working later at night. We have Thursday nights are designated as our lead service night. And we keep a couple employees on into the evening hours, and we're going through neighborhoods. So we've identified neighborhoods in the city of Eau Claire that we think have lead services or may have had lead services at some point in time. And we go through the entire neighborhood, and we knock on doors, we meet with people. And we've gotten a lot of good buy-in from that. The people are home when we're knocking on doors, which really helps, obviously. And, as they see us working in the neighborhood, we target a neighborhood, our contractors go in, they replace lead services. Well, if people missed us during that canvassing effort, they ask their neighbors, well, what's going on? Why are they digging holes over here? And it's really helped spread the word. So we're getting near 100% participation through neighborhoods, through that effort. So that's been a really big thing that we've just started recently, and we're going to keep progressing with that.
Now, if a homeowner doesn't get a knock on the door, maybe, or doesn't see their neighbor's yard getting dug up, how can they tell if they have a lead service line?
Yep. So there are a couple things they can do. Right where the pipe enters the home in the basement, right where the pipe comes through the concrete floor, they can take a magnet and try and attach it to the service. If it sticks, it's a galvanized pipe, which potentially has a lead lining. Galvanized pipe has also been included by the DNR as qualifying for it. There was lead used in the galvanizing process. So either way that works. If the magnet does not stick, it's probably either a copper material or it could be a polyethylene material. There are a couple instances where we ran into lead surfaces that are composed entirely of lead. They're kind of rare, but the magnet does not stick to that material. So honestly, the best thing to do if you have any question about, well, do I have a lead service or not, call us. We'll gladly come out. We have several people that are designated for this program. We'll come out, we'll inspect the service. If we do find it to be the material we're looking to replace, we'll go through the replacement program with you. It's very painless. It's simple. So please call us. I can give a phone number, 715-839-5045, 715-839-5045. You can also find information on our website, eauclairewi.gov, and there's a lot of lead service information in there. So there are steps, you know, it shows you how to test your own service. It will instruct you how to contact us. We also have an email address on that website, so you can send us an email requesting that we come out and inspect your service. So we're doing everything we can to make this really easy. It is a no-brainer for homeowners to do it now, especially since typically there's no money out of pocket. They don't have to pay the contractor directly. And we do have an ordinance now that requires that lead service be replaced. So, you know, if we encounter that down the road when we don't have money to help you out, the homeowner may be stuck with that bill of replacing a lead service. So now's the time to do it. Please call us. Please email us. We'll come out. We'll get you on the program if you qualify. And like I said, it's very painless. People have commented now how much nicer the program is that we've made these changes to it, and it's been very successful. So,
Kyle, do you see programs like the one that Lane's talking about at the City of Eau Claire across the state, or is Eau Claire a little bit unique?
A little bit of both. Eau Claire's program is certainly, I think it's the type of program we would want all municipalities to work towards. Removal of privately owned lead service lines is a very important for removing all the lead, right? Years ago, municipalities used to go and they would change their side of the lead service line, but they didn't own the private side, so they wouldn't be able to change that out. And as we learn more and more about lead in service line materials and how that affects drinking water, we learn that those private side service lines pose a very dangerous risk to folks. So, which is why in Wisconsin and really across the nation, we started to prioritize removing those private water, private side lines, and offering money and really engaging with enterprising municipalities like Eau Claire and other places around the state to put in those programs. We see this happening around the state. There are many municipalities doing the same things as Eau Claire. There are some that don't have the resources to do that right now. So, but I would say that Eau Claire's program is what we're looking for from municipalities around the state.
Yeah, let's look forward to more of solutions and things that might happen. Lane, where do you see drinking water quality going in Eau Claire? What do you want to see happen in the next 5 or 10 years?
Well, certainly we want to get past the PFAS issue. That is a big issue on our plate right now. The lead services, we've set a goal for ourselves to replace all of them by the end of 2023. So that's something that we're working our hardest to accomplish. You know, that's going to be an improvement for us. We're very fortunate in Eau Claire. We have a very abundant water supply. Once we get past this issue of PFAS, we're confident that we'll continue to provide quality water as we have, you know, for years and years and years. So, water quality, we've done some improvements at our water plant recently that have improved our water quality. We have an iron and manganese removal plant, and manganese is our mineral of choice that has been a bigger issue for us over time. But recently we've redone our water filters. We have 4 filter bays. We replaced the under drains. We replaced all the media. And then this last year, we just completed an $11 million settling basin project. So that what that does is there are plate settlers inside of our basins that water has to travel up those plates to get into our filters, but they're set at a correct angle of 55 degrees, which allows the water to travel up that, but the manganese minerals fall out to the bottom of our basins. So we're just seeing incredible water quality now by removing that extra portion of manganese. Our filters are performing great. You know, we used to see 8-hour run times at times. Now we're in the hundreds of hours of run times on our filters before they need a backwash. So we've taken steps to, you know, improve water quality in the city of Eau Claire, and we're looking for the future too. You know, we're anticipating a lot of expansion, and we took these steps so that we can continue to provide volumes of high quality water to the city.
Thank you so much for joining us, Kyle and Lane. And thank you for joining us today on the West Side. This is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio.